If Iowa had an official artist, it would be Grant Wood. His work and life continue to inspire.
He says what an artist can be, and he says how wonderful it is to be an artist, what an artist can explore.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with Wendy Elliott and William Rose, authors of the new travel guide, Grant Wood's Iowa. She's a farmer and he's an artist, which makes them excellent guides to the world of Grant Wood. It's also our fall membership drive here at Iowa Public Radio. Please take a moment to invest in the public radio service you depend on for great conversations, news, and music. The number to call, 800-971-8815. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Grant Wood's painting, American Gothic, is as recognizable as the Mona Lisa or The Scream. And for many people around the world, it is their one and only connection to the state of Iowa. For those who love Wood's work beyond American Gothic, a trip to Iowa provides many opportunities to experience the landscape he painted and connect with the artist. Wendy Elliott and William Rose have created a travel guide called Grant Wood's Iowa. Wendy is a writer and organic farmer. William is a painter who exhibits in Italy, England, and the United States. And William, I want to start with you because I get the sense that this book began with your personal journey to Iowa. And on the way to Iowa, you stopped in Chicago to see the painting American Gothic.
Yes, that's right. I did stop to see the American Gothic painting and a lot of other paintings. But I was particularly struck when I saw it because I wasn't expecting it to be as beautiful as it was in the actual appearance of it.
Now, you knew of this painting. You knew of Grant Wood. Did you have a relationship with his work before you came to Iowa?
A little bit. I mean, I knew the painting as a child. I mean, I think probably many children do because it's such a powerful image.
So in seeing it in person, you were struck by how masterful you felt the painting was, having seen this image so often as a child and so often in popular culture.
Yes, it's actually the touch of the paint that moved me. I mean, as a painter, I'm interested, I suppose it came a lot out of Impressionism, but the touch, the way the paint is applied, and the photographs have never communicated that. And it's actually really rather beautifully painted when you see it in the flesh.
So after seeing the painting American Gothic, then you traveled to Iowa. And I know that you weren't coming here strictly to study Grant Wood and to see his work, but as you traveled into the state, were you struck by the landscape and the echoes of it that you had seen in his work?
Oh, very much so. You know, it's a very gentle state. In some ways, not dissimilar from England. I mean, there are parts that are very sort of green and rolling, like the English landscape. Of course, all the cornfields and so on are very different.
Now, Wendy, you live in Ames, or you did live in Ames at the time that William came to spend a sabbatical in Iowa. And did you have a connection with Grant Wood's work?
Yes, I think Grant Wood was the first thing I knew about Iowa. I moved to Iowa as an adult and lived there for over 10 years. And I think Grant Wood was a really authentic ambassador for the state, to me anyway, because what I had known of the land I had seen through his painting at first, and the quirky characters that he paints remind me very much of the farm neighbors that I had. And the longer I stayed in Iowa, I think the more respect that I had for Grant Wood's honesty and mastery communicating, I think, not only the physical landscape of Iowa, but also the psychological one.
The fact that the two of you are married is not something that really comes into this book, but I know it to be true, and I sense that there is a good story about how this book and how this journey came about. So tell me what happened.
Originally, and this happened several years ago. We were both studying at Princeton University, and we were both taking an art class. And I think probably then I looked at her, and she looked at me, and we thought, well, we're rather ravishing creatures. And we dated briefly, but as when you're young, life takes its course. And I was in England, really, and she was here, and it didn't continue. And then several years later, something did happen.
And that something brought you to Iowa?
Well, I think that was one of the reasons I came to Iowa, yes.
So how did the idea of creating this travelogue come about?
Well, I think when I did come to Iowa, and one of the reasons I came to Iowa was that we were off to go to Princeton reunions, I asked Wendy to take me around to look at some of the museums. And as we went around looking at museums, I got more and more interested in Grant Wood, especially after we went to Cedar Rapids. And I thought, wow, this guy's really something, because he's not just an easel painter. I mean, he's got these stained glass windows. He's got these odd little constructions. He's got these murals. I'm like, my God, the world needs to know a bit more about this fellow. So that's sort of how things started to happen.
So I guess the book, in a way, is a record of the dates that we went on, because knowing that William was an artist and was used to all the cultural attractions in Europe, I wanted to make sure that I hosted him in a way that he would find interesting. So when we went on dates on the weekend, I would try to map out an itinerary for us that would go to a different place that figured in Grant Wood's life. So it's really a record of our dates, in a way.
Yeah, and it was purely platonic at first, I'd like to add.
Okay, noted. So as you have put this book together, which can guide anyone around the state of Iowa to see Grant Wood's work and also important places that figure in his life. And you have put this not really in a geographical order, but you start in Anamosa and Cedar Rapids, which are the places that Anamosa is where Grant Wood was born. Cedar Rapids is where he worked for so many years. He left Cedar Rapids and then returned to Cedar Rapids. So it figures very prominently in his life in a number of different parts of his life. Is this an ideal way to tour the area? Do you have a recommendation? Is that where we need to start?
Well, when we wrote the book, we wanted to be conscious of, I guess, mileage and fuel use. And so we tried to come up with routes that made sense to a person in an automobile. But we also tried to lay the book out as a biography of sorts. So the book is also chronological and maps out his life from childhood to his last teaching position at University of Iowa. So it's really a biography in a travel book format.
And I was struck. I've read a lot about Wood. I've talked to other biographers of his, and I've been to a lot of the places that you write about in the book. But in writing about Cedar Rapids, I guess I had no idea how many opportunities there are there to see Grant Wood's work.
It's true. It's really amazing.
There are all kinds of paintings at the Cedar Rapids Art Museum, and they have, is it the largest collection of Grant Wood's work?
That's true. And quite a few pieces are still owned by the Cedar Rapids School District. And we were very impressed with the collection of art up at Coe College, too. That's not to be missed.
And the Cedar Rapids School District, he donated a lot of pieces of art to the school district, right?
Yes, and was a teacher there and a high school student.
And so those are not exactly on display. You can't just walk into the schools and see them. But you made arrangements to go and see them.
Anyone using the guidebook can see them, and there's a phone number to call to ask in advance to be shown the paintings.
Well, let's start in Anamosa. Obviously, Anamosa is very, very proud of the fact that Grant Wood is their native son. The farmstead that he lived on for the first 10 years of his life is no longer there. But what can you see of Grant Wood in Anamosa?
Well, I think the thing that moved us the most was actually going to the cemetery, not to skip through his life and go right to the very end. But the grave is so humble and unassuming, and we saw it on a autumn day when there were yellow leaves strewn on the lawn, and it just seemed like such a private moment for us with him, and it really struck us as a contrast from times we've made pilgrimages to other people's graves. Like, for example, in Rome, we've been to see where Keats is buried, or a lot of people go to Graceland. But when you go to the graves of those people, you never have time alone with the person. I think we were really moved by how accessible and unchanged his life markers really are, you know, not only his grave, but being able to walk around his studio and to have it be intact to such a large extent. We really felt like we got to know him as a person.
Now, he returned to Anamosa later in life, as you mentioned. He lived in Cedar Rapids. That's where he went to high school, and
Where he painted the majority of his work.
Right, but he did also found the Stone City Art Colony, which was a return to Anamosa. And so you can visit that still?
Well, what's left, it's a sort of ruined tower and that sort of thing. There's a sort of arena, bits of stone in the ground. It's sort of very romantic to go visit the remnants of the colony. And there's also, you know, the other thing is there's the Antioch one-room schoolhouse, which is sort of fun. The thing that has moved me most in retrospect, because we started the book several years ago now, is his studio, you know, his home and studio in Cedar Rapids, which is above the carriage house of the Turner Mortuary. You're very lucky to have that particular property still, largely speaking, as it was left. And because, you know, I mean, in Europe, we go off to, say, Aix-en-Provence, and we have a Cézanne studio, and it's in pretty ropey condition, but we still have it. And then we have Raphael's house in Urbino, which is actually very wonderful. But there aren't so many buildings still in existence in which you can still sense the patina of the artist. So I think, you Iowans are very lucky to have that. And I think it's very interesting that it's, that he spent a lot of his painting life living next to a mortuary, watching bodies coming in and out of a building. Because, you know, after all, paintings last a long time past the painter's death, and often into, hundreds and hundreds of years.
Well, I find it very interesting that the studio is well preserved, partly because the Turner family seemed to truly recognize Grant Wood's gifts, and perhaps before anybody else was recognizing his gifts. So he lived there rent-free. He actually gave them paintings in exchange for rent. So these were people who really understood that this was a master at work.
Yes, that's right. And, being a painter, painters don't often want to write books, but I took the book on as a sort of student of Grant Wood, because I thought he was very interesting what he was having to deal with. I mean, here he is in a rural background, he's very far from the centers of things, and he's trying to create sort of a foundation of an art world. And, you know, so he goes from setting up art school colonies, from doing monumental stained glass projects. I mean, he has his hand in a whole lot of things. And I thought, well, this guy really sets the stage for other artists. He says what an artist can be, and he says how wonderful it is to be an artist, what an artist can explore. And I think that in today's world, they're very important things to be getting on with, because I think it's very easy to neglect that side of our lives. And, you know, he's created a foundation for the Midwest, really.
One of the fascinating things that I found in looking through the collection of things that we can see in Cedar Rapids is not just this preservation of his great work, but an opportunity to see another side of Grant Wood, too. Some of the unusual objects that he made, a found objects sculpture that he made called Lilies of the Alley that has an old gear and an old can and different things on it that, I mean, it was really probably put together as something of a joke by him, right?
Yes, I would think so. It's sort of the bohemian in him and the beat poet in him. It sort of reminds me of what Frank Gehry, the architect. He's just playing around. And you know, it's interesting that he did go to California, I think, and there's a bronze self-portrait where he looks very Hollywood. But, you know, that's just another side of that multifaceted person who everybody thinks is just American Gothic.
Well, we are going to take a short break, and we'll get back to this conversation in a moment and move beyond the Cedar Rapids, Anamosa area to some of the other places where we can get better acquainted with the work and the man, Grant Wood. I'm talking with William Rose and Wendy Elliott. They are the authors of the book Grant Wood's Iowa, which is a travelogue. It can take you around the state of Iowa to get better acquainted with Grant Wood. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Wendy Elliott and William Rose. They are the authors of a book called Grant Wood's Iowa, and it's a travelogue. It can take you around the state of Iowa to get to know the work of painter Grant Wood better and also to visit some of the important places in his life. William Rose is a painter himself. He exhibits in Italy, England, and the United States. He's also taught at UC Berkeley and at Princeton University. Wendy Elliott is a writer and an organic farmer, and she's also taught at Iowa State University. They worked on this book together. They were spending time in the city of Ames, and that's another place on the tour of Grant Wood's work and his life. And it's one that I think if you went to Iowa State University, you know about it, but maybe isn't well known outside of that circle of people. And it's interesting that you point out that this really, in many ways, points to the pinnacle of Grant Wood's career. He created American Gothic, which got him a great deal of attention. Things really took off for him. And then he was named the Public Works Art Project Director or Coordinator in Iowa. And you call that the pinnacle of his career. Can you tell me why that was such an important time?
Well, I think it's because of, first of all, the leadership role he took on. I mean, all of a sudden he's going from being a sort of just some humble artist to being in charge of an army of artists. You know, he starts to legislate numerous murals within the state. Then they create the murals in the library, Parks Library. It's his role in the collective that makes it the pinnacle. I mean, I don't rate the murals as his greatest achievements in terms of painting, but I think what we're getting at is his role in society at this point.
And of course, that was during the Great Depression. And the fact that he had that position of leadership at a time when the nation was struggling so much, do you feel like that made this work even more important?
Yes, I do. And I think a lot of people do. I think increasingly people look back to that period as one of the periods in which artists actually had jobs. You know, they were like treated like builders and electricians. And a lot of the artists that we came across were saying that, you know, at last we've got a proper job.
And what really became clear to us was how Grant Wood was not an island. He was in a group of colleagues that influenced him, you know, as much as he influenced them. And we tried to learn as much as we could about the other artists that painted with him.
Yeah, and the whole point of the book is to start to introduce a community of artists. You know, there's Christian Peterson and Lowell Hauser, who feature in the Ames chapter, Marvin Cohn as well, partly because I think they're important people, and you can't look at an artist in a vacuum. You have to sort of look at who's influencing him, who's around him.
And for people who haven't seen these murals in the Parks Library on the Iowa State University campus, can you describe what you see in this sort of grand staircase, these murals that Wood and his colleagues created?
Well, it's a two-tier system. There's the downstairs, which is what is Breaking the Prairie, isn't it called? It's a sort of agricultural, and then upstairs is all three walls, in which he's broken it down into a sort of narrative sequence where you have various agriculture and home economic type events going on. And it's very strange because it's almost like these Quattrocento Italian churches where they have a narrative structure that reveals Christ. And here it is, a narrative structure revealing agriculture, scientific events.
And Wendy, had you, having taught at Iowa State, did you have a relationship with these murals?
Yes. I had farmed in Story County for 10 years, and then I enrolled at ISU in the MFA program, the creative writing program, and was teaching on campus as a part of my teaching fellowship. So definitely was spending time in the library and on campus. But, you know, I think I'm almost more intrigued by the mural in the post office than I am by the one in the library, to be honest. Lo Hauser, who painted the mural in the Ames Public Post Office, spent time in Central America, and it has such a Mayan feeling to it. And he got to know Diego Rivière, and I just think that it's such a fascinating painting that I'd encourage everyone to go take a look at that the next time they're in Ames.
Well, you mentioned Christian Peterson, and he was a contemporary of Wood, and his work is all over the Iowa State University campus. But you also say that this period really created a culture of public art on that campus and in the city of Ames.
Yes, and it's a good example of how Grant Wood's legacy is really with us still. The state government voted that a percentage of revenue will be spent on public art, and so the state still has a commitment to art that I think was initially generated by Grant Wood.
But of course, it always raises difficult issues, because state-funded art can often lead a little bit towards, you know, totalitarian, you know, these kind of, you think of the Soviet Union, and there's an aspect sometimes in Wood's work which is a little bit, you know, I mean, politics and art don't necessarily go that well together. Well, so, I mean, that's one of the issues that I think I wanted the book to raise, you know, is like the complexity of this chap, because he does flirt with art that's sponsored by the government, by the state. And then he's also a very independent man who's going to say his thing. And in a way, that's what America is about. I mean, it's, you've got these forces.
And I think he felt, he was surprised when he was snubbed by his students at University of Iowa, because I think when he finally got his first really secure tenured position over at University of Iowa, the art students there felt that he had been too much of an official artist or a government-sponsored artist.
Mm-hmm. And right, there really was a backlash against his work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I think that caught him off guard, because in a way he's a local community activist in the largest sort.
But the whole thing about the book for us is to get, you know, me as a foreigner coming to Iowa, thinking, well, my goodness, I think a lot of other foreigners would like to have a book like this, to get them out into Iowa and to start exploring the Iowa that's disappearing, because there's a strong sense of that in the book. You know, these places, these little towns that are drying up because of the larger agricultural changes. And these, you know, you see these beautiful downtowns that are practically empty now. And that, you know, I started to have a very kind of, I hate to say it, but nostalgic feeling for those places. And I thought, well, it's important for people, you know, to write a book like this so that people start going and visiting some of these places and seeing the beautiful world that was there.
Well, you were quite surprised by the depth of your feelings for the Iowa landscape and these little towns in Iowa, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And, you know, that only grew stronger when we drove to Colorado. And I did, you know, I wasn't as keen on, once we left Iowa, you know, when we got back to Iowa, I thought, oh, beautiful place, my goodness.
you had a mini experience of what so many people who grow up in Iowa and take it for granted have when they leave and then return to the state. You talk about things disappearing, but I think one of the striking thing about Grant Wood's work, particularly his landscapes, is he wasn't painting natural vistas, you know, the kind of timeless places that you would expect to last forever. He was painting these rural landscapes and depicting farms and, you know, cornfields and things that were very commonplace, but also are quite transient. But still, if you drive through the Iowa landscape, you see this. You see Grant Wood's work in reality still.
Yes, and certainly his early landscapes, he paints a very intimate kind of world. Ma and Pa Kettle, you know, kind of those, the farms that don't exist anymore, where you had a pig, a cow, a horse, three chickens, that kind of world. You know, that's also sort of brought up for us some notions of sustainability, but it was also a world that I think my parents knew better. Certainly in England, they knew that kind of world. And, you know, we had a donkey and so on and so forth as a child. And I've got to say, one thing that did surprise me about Iowa these days is I didn't see any animals. And I was a bit shocked because where I live in Somerset, we've got cows and sheep and horses. And I did say to Wendy, where are the cows?
Well, I could show you a few. They're there. You just have to know where to look, I guess. Wendy, as a farmer yourself, when you look at these farmsteads that are reflected in Grant Wood's work, do you connect with that?
Yes, and I was really excited to be able to find the driving directions to some of the exact places where he painted. For example, young corn was painted outside Amana, and we were able to find the directions from a colleague of his from the Stone City Colony, who had given the directions to the archivist at the Cedar Rapids Museum. So that's one place a person could go to actually stand where he made the painting. And of course, by the side of the road in Stone City, you can see the quarry as it looks in the painting, and other paintings as well. We really try to find as many locations that, you know, that haven't changed, where people can go and experience what he saw.
And of course, you can go to Eldon, Iowa, and see the American Gothic House. And I am struck in seeing that location, for one thing, how very simple it was. And I am struck by his eye, how he could see something so iconic, or something that became so iconic in this very simple structure that many people wouldn't have turned and looked at twice.
Yes, we were able to locate the notes that he made, and also people's memories of his discussions on his sketches for the painting. And he came back from Eldon because he was teaching a plein air drawing class there that was sponsored by a Harvard professor. And he noticed the elongated Gothic windows, and he came back and told his friends that he just had to paint the building with similarly elongated figures in front of the building, and that he wanted to have them be a really strong vertical, just like Gothic architecture. And it made us wonder, when he wanted to do that type of painting, if he was trying to stress the transcendence, you know, almost like the spirituality that a person can experience working with the land as a farmer, or if it was even maybe a cultural criticism that when you're maybe in a small town and your every move is watched, you feel sort of hemmed in, you know, or you know, sort of tense, like the people in the painting. And it was funny to read that he had actually located a spinster that he wanted to have pose alongside his dentist, but he was such a considerate and reserved person. He couldn't get the nerve to actually ask the older woman to pose because he was afraid he would offend her if he made her look too obviously spinsterish. And so he decided to have his sister pose beside his dentist and then just sort of age her as necessary.
Some of the other places, you mentioned a difficult time that he had in his life. When he was at the University of Iowa, there was a backlash against his work. Plus, he had a late-in-life marriage that was not happy and not successful. And so Iowa City, although he lived in Iowa City, is a very bittersweet place to visit these landmarks.
I think that's absolutely right. And the landmarks, I mean, that's why we take you not actually just to Iowa City, but to, say, the Figge Art Museum, and there we have
in Davenport.
Yeah, in Davenport, which is fairly near, I think.
And right, which was not one of the places where he spent time, but they do have a collection of his work.
Yes, and that's the whole point of the book, is to get you to places where he either lived or where you can see the results of his labors. And there too, you know, there's some self-portraits there, and I think the book very well discusses those self-portraits and puts them in a context. And you know, I couldn't help but think about Rembrandt. I mean, and also the sense that Grant Wood looks very isolated in them. He's one return from Bohemia. There he is, looking out at the viewer, while everyone else is looking downward and are all kind of ill, you know, almost haunted looking. And then the other one, the other self-portrait that we write about, is with a windmill behind him, and he's again looking rather exhausted and sad and alone. And you know, in some ways I think he felt that at the end of his life. I mean, he certainly died very young.
Yeah, he was only 50 years old when he died. You also write about Des Moines and the Des Moines Art Museum, where you can see a number of his works as well. And I'm struck in looking through these different recommendations, you have some pretty glowing things to say about Iowa's art museums. Is that a part of your message as well?
Well, yeah, I think it's amazing that you've got such good museums and that they have so many good exhibitions all the time. I mean, I first heard about the Des Moines Art Museum when I was a student at the Berkeley University in California, and I'd gone to see the Mirandi exhibition at MoMA in San Francisco, and there it was. I opened the catalog, and there was somebody called Amy Worthen who'd written in it. And what was really the point was that exhibition, which was so important, came from Des Moines to San Francisco. And as far as I know, that was what really launched Giorgio Morandi's career in America, or his reputation, that is.
When you were going to all of these different museums, did you feel like they were well visited as well?
Well, that was something I was confused about, and we didn't see as many people, and often our tours were on the weekends, because I think that's when Wendy was able to make them. But no, I thought that you could up the percentage of people there, certainly, and that's another reason why we thought the book was important.
Do you feel like maybe we take this for granted? We have these resources we're not taking advantage of.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just that I did wonder where the people were.
So I can imagine someone using your book to come to Iowa as a tourist and tour the state, drive around, spend maybe a week or so going to all of these different places. I can also imagine a lot of Iowans picking this up and making some really wonderful weekend trips, just like you guys did.
Yes, I think the each chapter has additional ancillary attractions that I think would help even a local person discover new aspects of the cities. Grant Wood was an avid thespian and would organize amateur theater. I felt like I wanted to write a book that he would approve of, and so I found it important to list the contact information for all the amateur theater troupes in the different cities that we take people to, and we hope that people would combine not only a visit of museums and seeing work by dead artists, but also trying out some live amateur theater and supporting artists, you know, that are alive in the cities now by visiting the artist cooperatives that we list and the regional art festivals that we also list.
You also listed a lot of natural areas where people could go and experience Iowa's landscape.
Yes, and farmers markets.
Yes.
We think he would want those in the book as well.
and you wanted them in the book. So.
Yes.
So of all of the places that the two of you visited in Iowa, and I want you each to answer this separately, and maybe it'll be the same place, but where of all of these places did you feel closest to Grant Wood? William, you can go first.
Well, I've got to say it's a studio, though I also like the cemetery in a way. But, you know, I don't mean I like the cemetery. It's not a question of liking, but it did move me. But the studio ultimately is the thing that moves me the most.
How about you, Wendy?
I think up at the Stone City Colony, it made me think about themes of freedom and limitation in his life. You know, to realize that he was born in Anamosa, the location of a Victorian penitentiary, where children must have been cognizant of the fact that prisoners were there, and that the prisoners went out to work in the quarries in Stone City, you know, with the forced labor, and that later he would actually return to Stone City to start a utopian community is a bit ironic that, you know, the idea of an artistic colony is an expression of freedom in a place that was, you know, formerly a forced labor camp in a way. So it's interesting how he's able to create and negotiate spaces in his life with the little resources that he does have in such inventive ways.
And William, we started this conversation with your visit to see American Gothic at the Art Institute in Chicago and how you were struck by that painting, seeing that in real life. Now, as an artist yourself, has your exploration of Wood's life changed the way that you see his work?
Well, it certainly made me much more aware of the range in his work. It's made me appreciate him a lot more. Yes, it has changed.
Has this influenced your work?
Well, he and I are very different kinds of painters, but yes, it has, yes.
William joined the artist collaborative CASA in Ames off Lincoln Way, and he painted quite a bit during his sabbatical in Ames, and since sold those paintings to even celebrities in Europe. So I think he was inspired and created some interesting landscapes of his own and figurative pieces, you know, that went back to Europe and are now in different collectors' private collections here in Europe. So
which originated where I painted in Iowa. You know, I painted them in
right.
Iowa, bring them back to England and sell them all.
Yeah, so it's definitely inspired him.
Well, thank you both so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charity.
Wendy Elliott and William Rose have created a travel guide. It's called Grant Wood's Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.